Psychobite, thank you so much for joining us on Talks with Tony. And we have actually have an exclusive here, because before we hit record, we identified that this is your very first podcast interview.
Yeah,
thank you so much for us breaking your podcast virginity, as it were. I'll be gentle with you, I promise. So for those people who've not yet had the pleasure of hearing anything that you've got to say, I'm really excited to bring this story, because you have gone from zero to building multi-million dollar companies, you know, over $10 million by the time you were 28.
Yeah.
Then losing it all and building it all back up before you got to 32. So this is a phenomenal story that I think everyone needs to hear. But there's also going to be a lot of lessons in here for everyone, irrespective of where they are on that investment journey. So for those people who don't know you, how would you describe right now what you do?
Now?
Yes, I always do a right now, because everyone goes back to the beginning on a podcast. I like to start with, how would you describe your business style now, or what you do? You know, if you had a... if a doctor has employment status after their name, it says doctor. What's yours?
I would say I'm an entrepreneur for sure. I'm a person that opened and closed around 27 to 28 businesses so far at the age of 34 today, and still opening businesses. So I would say a serial entrepreneur and a real estate investor.
Serial entrepreneur and real estate investor. We'll get to real estate investor, because that's, although that came secondary, it's actually quite huge results that you've had. But you come from quite humble beginnings. So you obviously started as on your entrepreneurial journey way back when in school, although it wasn't that long ago. I was very depressed to hear just how young you actually are. So you've always been an entrepreneur. How, where did that drive come from? From, you know, selling items in school?
Father. My father, first of all, like as a person, my father for sure. Because growing up at home, he wasn't a businessman. He was an employee, and he made up his way to becoming a businessman and opening his first company and. So I always heard the words, cash, give him the cash, pay him the check. Oh, I'll pay you at the end of the month. So, and we literally never saw him at home. He's always at work. So that thing became like, growing up, Tony was, I have to work. I have to work hard. I have to reach. You know what I mean?
You followed in his footsteps, because what we see is what we do.
Exactly. Like, so if he was a farmer, I'm going to become a farmer. If he was let's say a doctor, most likely I'm going to hear the terms and become a doctor. Mm. Most likely that's how it works, right? Yeah. So I started from school selling, I remember back in grade 7 and 8 when our cafeteria in my school back in Sharjah in UAE was boring, where we had only pizzas and, you know. So I had to bring those zingers from KFC and stuff like that and sell them double the price.
So I'm really interested by that terminology there, I had to. I think that's something, having, you know, only spent a short amount of time with you, is that this is not something, it's not just about I'd like to achieve X, Y, and Z. You're driven by a need.
Yes.
I had to do it. So you were buying and selling. You know, I called you the UAE, the Middle Eastern Dell boy is how I would best describe you, on a much greater scale. So you started by buying in product, so KFC Zingers, and selling them at double the price. You did this kind of en masse, though.
Yeah, and it wasn't legal to do back then. It was like smuggling drugs to school, because they wanted to sell their pizzas.
Yeah.
And I had to get the driver to dig a hole under the fence and just put me that bag. When there's no one, take that bag. I'll be open today. I'll just say everything. Like, we all have our ups and downs. And sell them double the price. And then it went to starting football tournaments, like soccer tournaments, and hire, getting teams, get them to pay, getting them medals, giving them money prizes, like cash prizes, and making money myself, of course. I'm not doing it as a...
it's not a hobby.
Exactly. So... the last thing would be the last big thing in school, back in high school, would be the graduation gala or like night.
This is such a phenomenal story.
Like, we had a committee, like every school of 16 people, I remember, and I had, they were doing like bake sales or whatever shows and stuff like that to raise some money, and I felt it's
too small.
Too small. I was like, do you guys want a 5-star hotel? And they're like, nice. They're like, yeah, for sure. I was like, do you want sponsors? I was like, yeah. They're like, yeah. I was like, fire the whole committee, leave it on me. So I remember making that night around 80,000 to my pocket, and making like, I told them I'll do it in a 5-star hotel, and I did it in a 5-star hotel. and Emirates Towers, I remember. And I got sponsors, Pepsi, I remember it was Chevrolet was on board, some magazines. I had the TV come and shoot some interviews with them. I had the radio play a couple of songs or tracks that night from there. Great DJ. So they were very happy, and I was happy and went out with money.
So you were connecting people together and creating the experience for everyone. How on earth does someone of high school age, on their own, firing the rest of the committee, get all of that and create all of that at such a young age? What do you think are the traits that you had or the skill sets? Was it the people that you connected with previously? Was it just sheer determination? How on earth does someone do that?
Look, I always felt that or thought about that. It's funny that you asked this question and I still think about it. We all have pockets in our pants, right? Or our jeans. So everybody has a pocket. And every pocket has money in it. And if it's not your money, it's the credit card's money or your parents' money or anyone's money. So you just have to find the need for them to put their hand in their pocket and just give you that money for the idea you're giving out. So I felt that if they want to play soccer, I'll make a soccer tournament. Or let's say football. Yeah. If they want to play basketball, I'll do that. If they want a party, I'll do that. So I always found the need of what they're looking for. Like, they want different sandwiches, I'll get the sandwiches for you.
So listening to your clients, listening to what people want. And so a lot of businesses are started because someone has an idea and thinks, oh, I'd really like to create a business around X. You've done it completely the opposite way around, whereby you've identified needs or problems and just gone and found the solution. Or if not, you found the person to find the solution and you've just connected between the two. Would it be fair to say that that's still the method that you use now, 26, 27, 28 businesses later?
Yes. Yeah, definitely the same exact one, but of course it's different these days because I learned how to focus more. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're doing good at one thing, before going and opening another field or opening another door, make sure you master that, and then from your smallest pocket, maybe open that other business just for the fun of it, or the fact that you opened it because you want to. Mm. But don't diversify from the beginning.
Too fast.
No,
you can't. This is something that we're going to touch upon when we go back, because we are going to go back to the beginning. We've started with your school and your need to serve other people. You know, no more will you have just the choice of pizzas. You'll bring in the KFC Zingers. There's been a lot of lessons along the way because you've created some super successful businesses, but you've also, you know, had some really challenging times, and I want to touch upon that. Yeah, there's small challenges along the way. You've had huge challenges and obviously bounced back, so I think there's a lot of lessons for anyone who's listening, whether they are people starting out just setting up a business or whether they are the you of, you know, around that time, 2018-ish, facing major challenges. I think there's going to be huge lessons for everyone. But how do you then go? Let's go from school age, high school age, finishing your graduation, you know, $82,000 generated and in your back pocket. But when we were talking earlier on, so before we hit record, I have to identify that when we were talking about this wasn't just a case of earn money and put it in your bank.
No, that was 82,000 dirhams, which is around $22,000. But that was a big deal.
Is that it?
That was a big deal back then from like a night.
82,000 dirhams.
But that started where I wanted, like I want to try everything before the age of maturity. So I want to try every single job, every single thing I can think of to see where am I going to be later on. Because I believe that sometimes people are not doing well in life just because they're not in the right field. And they just did not try to see what field they belong to or they like the most.
Yeah. They fall into it, like we were talking earlier on, following in father's or mother's footsteps.
Most of the people do that because, you know what? Don't do that. Don't take loans because it's going to hurt you. And this is where you stop.
Wow.
So yeah. I wanted to try everything. And I always had problems with my father growing up, to be honest with you. Because he didn't like the way I did things.
Well, let's move to there within your kind of career progression. So you'd finished, you'd graduated high school.
And we traveled to Canada, from Dubai to Canada in 2008.
Yep.
In Canada, I went to college for business administration and marketing, international marketing studies. Over there, I did also do some business. I started as a cleaner in a restaurant. Because my dad was
also following in dad's footsteps, because he began as a cleaner, did you say?
He did, yeah. But it's kind it's kind of like I knew nothing about mm-hmm. working in stores. And then when I applied to the store, he's like, yeah, we need a cleaner. I was like, okay, I'll become a cleaner. So I cleaned the restaurant and then I became that shawarma guy that does their shawarma and stuff like that. I didn't like it, but I did very well. Mm-hmm. I moved into Aldo shoe store and stuff like that. Like, you know, the hourly wage jobs. And then I knew that I'm not an employee. This is not for me.
What was it about being an employee that made you realize that? Was it the limitations on finance?
Yeah, why should I work for someone to make him money? Why?
And by this point, your father had already built some really successful businesses.
Yes, and I'm seeing it. And I'm seeing it. And I was like, okay, like, why should I spend 8 hours of my day? Like, I was explaining it to a friend of mine that does, he has a government job in Canada. And he's like, after taxes, I get paid $4,000. And I was like, so $4,000 divide 30. He's like, no, I work 25 days or 24 days a month. I was like, no. But you spend a month to get that $4,000 after mm-hmm. tax, right? He's like, yes. I was like, divide that by 30. $133, if I'm not mistaken. I was like, you are worth $133 a day? That's it? If I knock doors right now in front of you, I can sell cutting grass for $1,000 mm-hmm. in a day. So you can't be just worth $133. And this is when he literally thought about it. And he's like, you're actually right. So I never found it right to work for someone, but you have to start somewhere.
Yeah.
You can't just be, oh, you want to become, no, you have to start somewhere. And I never wanted to work under a manager or under anyone, to be honest.
So how then did the first company that you ever set up, well, what came next?
Oh, what came next is I felt that there's a need for Middle Eastern wedding dancing shows and choreography. So I knew nothing about it, but I used to be, and I still, a good folkloric dancer, like we call it Debke. Mm-hmm. And people were like watching and taking videos every time we were dancing, me and my friends. I was like, why don't I?
But this wasn't a job or a business. This was just something that you were doing as a hobby. And from that spawned the idea of actually, we enjoy this. We're good at it.
And people liked it.
And people liked it.
So why don't we just get costumes, which I got from Lebanon overseas, and I got the drums. And then I got my friends. I told them I'm going to pay you by wedding, like every wedding, $60 or $80, like dollars. And then I went and I learned the dance from YouTube, from weddings from the Middle East. And I became a choreographer teaching them these dances and creating new moves.
So just for clarity, we need to explain to people that you literally watched videos on YouTube, lifted the music from it, because you could do that back then.
Back then,
this was when, 2009. And because then you're like, oh, I became a choreographer. You taught yourself how to basically create dances.
Yes.
And you became a choreographer in, was it less than a month?
Literally less than a month.
And in 2 months, we found the problem.
Yeah, we found the need. And we created a solution. I did get them to wear the costumes. I had two costumes, golden and purple and white and silver and white. And we took like nice photos, had flyers. And I remember back then in 2009, building just a small app, like a first page of application. So when I met couples, I'd be like, we have a phone application. Back in 2009, that was big, like, for a dance crew. Right? That was big, you know, you can put your name and your
email. You can't just book
email.
Me.
Exactly. So, and we finished the first year in around, I would say, at least 50 to 60 weddings. I was charging $1,500 to $3,000 a wedding.
But only paying friends?
$60
a wedding. So you made a significant amount of money. Was that where the real spark of this is something I want to replicate in other areas that came from?
Because I knew it's just a matter of time that I'm going to leave this business. I was there for just studying, finishing school. I'm not going to take this business anywhere. I don't want that business.
It was just literally
was
a means
fun.
To an end.
Dancing, instead of dancing for free... Like, you know, when I say dancing, it's like a manly dance that we dance. Like, it's more of drums. I'm not
just need to clarify.
Just
this
clarifying
is a manly
that
dance.
Manly dance. So starting from there, I was like, you know what? It's my university money or college money that I'm going to be spending out, going out or traveling. And that's all. That's it. I remember my parents not knowing how much I charged for weddings because they literally didn't need me back then, like financially. Mm-hmm. So I remember putting that money, and nobody taught me that I need to buy maybe real estate or whatever, because my dad was doing the business right way and he just wanted us to go to school.
Yeah.
And if he knew that education. I was making that kind of money, he would have been very worried.
Would he have put a stop to it? Do you think he'd have tried to stop you from doing that?
Not really. As long as I'm just doing this, you know, like if I'm doing something good for a good cause and I'm making money out of it, why not? But he would be worried, where am I spending this money?
Well, We need to identify that, because you didn't put it into a bank. You weren't taught what to do and to reinvest and all of the skill sets that you now know. So you literally put it under your pillow.
Back then, yes.
Okay, back then, we do need to clarify. Yes. It's not just under the pillow now. So then that was the kind of, the entrepreneurial flair continued through.
Exactly.
How then did you go from, you know, earning quite decent money while studying? Because, you know, when we were talking about university, you obviously, you studied business administration and marketing. So there were some skill sets there that you've used within the business, the flyers, they're standing outside of, you know, different businesses to hand out flyers and guide people to your website as it was then. Do you think that skill set was learned at university, or was that just a coincidence that
Do you
was
want the truth or
always?
Or podcast?
No, always the truth.
Marketing, always the truth? No, that school doesn't teach you that. You got to go out, try stuff yourself. You got to learn yourself. Because if school really taught that, everybody would be a millionaire. Let's not, like, the best business in the world these days, in my own perspective. Oh, I'm going to say something big. I don't know if I should say it.
Oh, well, if you don't think you should, that's exactly why I want you to.
They're scams.
What are scams? Universities?
Not every field, though.
No. No, as in, if you need to be, you know, doctor, fully qualified, a doctor, absolutely.
You need to go to
a...
Yeah. But you tell me that you need to learn business... Learn business? You need to fail to learn business.
Do you know what? I absolutely love this. So my eldest son is 13. He's currently at the point, and in UK schools at this point, at the age of 13, you choose what's known as your options. What subjects do you want to choose as your focus? So you have to do English, you have to do maths, you have to do sciences of some sort, but you can choose the alternatives. And I had a conversation with my 13-year-old, who is, as we discussed previously before we hit record, you know, he's buying and selling things on Vinted. Beautiful. And on eBay. He's a bit of a hustler. He sells sweets in school, but only Bravo. The sweets that he can keep inside of his pocket, because they do bag searches. And when we had a conversation around what you're going to choose as your studies, he said to me, well, I want to be in business, but I don't know if I want to study business studies, because most business studies teachers don't actually have a business. They just teach it, and they all drive cars like Honda Civic, and I want something better. And I thought, I can't argue with them. Can't argue with a 13-year-old, because most of them are in an academic role, being paid, as you say, by the hour, realising they're probably earning the equivalent of £130 a day. Because they're working 30 days, the equivalent thereof. So yeah, I think that's a huge thing. I went to university. I also studied business administration and marketing. I don't use that degree at all in anything that I do.
But Tony, it's not that. It's just that when I continued studying, it's because my mom, by the way, my mom, there's 17 years and a half difference between me and her. And she stopped school to get us. And raise us. And then once she raised us, she went back to school and then back to university, and she graduated as an interior designer. So her graduating made it seem impossible for us not to graduate.
There's no excuse not to.
You can't. If she did after all of those years, how are you going to say you didn't finish your degree? And another thing is that I felt that if I'm successful one day, and I'm making lots of money, and being successful is making money. Don't tell me you're being successful in a different way. So this is a big part of it.
Okay.
Because of money comes lots of things that you did before. So if I'm successful one day, I have companies, I have the amount of money that you can call someone successful according to it or whatever. I'm successful let's say as a father, as a husband, as a brother, as an elder brother. So this is all being successful, right? Mm-hmm. In different ways. So I know that I'm going to be seated one day on a table. And it happened to me once where that person tried to put me down in a way, but he couldn't. So he tried to put me down business-wise. And then he was surprised that back then I had like 3 companies, and like I was working in different fields. Plastic surgery and the restaurants and the fashion.
We're going to get to that.
So I remember him saying, oh yeah, so what do you do? You work for a company? What company do you work? I was like, no, I have my own businesses. He's like, oh. So he I remember him sitting, sorry.
No.
Like this on the table and having a cigar. All right, having a cigar like that. And then he puts his feet down. He's like.
He sat up.
Second question. So, and are you doing well, like as business guy? Yeah, I'm doing well. So, and then he's like, did you study anything or you just started working? I was like, yeah, I finished my college in Canada and my degree, bachelor degree in the US, like online schooling in the US, Davenport University. He's like, oh, nice. Then he puts it down. And he's like, so are you married? I was like, I was 27. I was like, yeah, I just recently got married. He's like, nice. The ego was going down.
And his whole demeanor changed
then
as well.
He asked me, he's like, and then this is where it killed him. He's like, so how old are you? And he was in his late 30s, early 40s. And I was like, I'm just 27 years old. So he was trying to pinpoint a weakness. Mm-hmm. And that's why I continued my education. So one day when they're like, oh, he's successful, but he's not educated. Oh, no, I am educated.
So the education was literally just so that you had a paper exercise so that you could say, yes, I studied. Yes, I've got the degrees. I've got the letters after my name. I've got the piece of paper that says I've studied. But the real education is actually in the real world.
No. It's obviously, in 4 years, if you take me to a ballet dancing class for 4 years, I'll definitely know how to stand on my...
Yeah, on point.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to learn something, of course. But it's not like I'm going to... If I spend that 4 years with a very successful mentor, day to day, like 5 days a week, 8 hours a day for 4 years, oh, I'm going to be way more successful and way more knowledgeable than spending it in different classes with students and spending time. So it's more of
I agree 100%. Yeah. And I'm very much a believer of, I've got children. If they want to go to university, I'm more than happy for them to. If they want to go into law or they want to go into medicine, and, you know, it's a requirement for it. Well, I'm going to say that we're going to talk about why it's not in some instances in your experience. But other than that, I want, again, if they want to do it for the experience. So I had a great experience at university. I had fun. I went on lots of nights out. I met lots of great people. I worked two jobs at that point in time. So I worked really hard. So I learned the work ethic of studying during the daytime, but doing, you know, two, often three jobs at a time. So I think we always learn from it, but your learnings came elsewhere. And we've touched upon a couple of things, you know, we're teasing people with the, you haven't always necessarily had the official qualifications for the things that you've done, because you've had the most diverse businesses. You know, you don't get to 27, 28, 29, however many businesses it is. So it started with the folklore dancing and making some money in that way. Tell us a bit about the different types of businesses you've set up since and how you managed to do it. Because when I heard your story first, I basically said, have you ever seen the movie Catch Me If You Can? Your response was, yeah.
I've got this
people
before.
People always say that. So tell us a little bit about how you managed to get into some different job roles and create different businesses, but without the necessary qualifications.
Oh.
Can we go there?
Yeah, we can go there. Look, sometimes in life you have to do things to get to where you want, as long as you're not hurting anyone. As long as you're not cheating anyone, mm-hmm. not taking anyone's money without him being happy and satisfied and with his knowledge. You know, like...
I like the pre-frame. You've put it in there. You didn't actually hurt or harm anyone. You actually helped
Never.
People
helped
within
people.
These businesses.
Exactly.
Just not necessarily having the, you know, university
so the first
accepted
job,
qualifications.
After I finished from Canada, from the college, and then I registered for the university online, mm-hmm. and I went to Dubai. The first job was... I went there as a wedding planner for 2 months. And then the second job was an English teacher in an English institute.
Hold on. We're not just skimming over that one. So at this point in time, you'd moved from Canada back to...
In 2012.
Yep. So you were then living in Dubai, but studying in the US, and it was online studies that you were doing. But, you know, it wasn't a case of a shed load of money in your back pocket at this point. You're actually staying on a friend's sofa at this point and knew you needed to build up a business. Is that right?
And when I moved to Dubai?
When you moved back to Dubai?
Yeah, when I moved back to Dubai, yes, I was an employee. I started as an employee because my dad refused to hire me in any of his companies. And it was kind of like, you go and continue your studies in the US. And I was like, I can't do it online, but I want to go start my life, my business life in Dubai. I was so eager to go back to business. I wanted to start business. Stop with this education. Let me mm-hmm. start business. And I'll still do the education on the side, like, which is online.
But the business is the main
It was
priority.
My main focus. Like, if you ever meet my mom and tell her, sorry, what was Kusai saying all the time? She'll tell you, Kusai was always talking about when am I going to start working or doing business. So I went back to Dubai in 2012 and I had to sleep on a couch for 2 months because I was an employee in this company, and then I had as a wedding planner, and then I left it and became an English teacher at an English institute.
How? You're skirting around this issue. This is a great story.
Okay, when I left my first job as a wedding planner, and I was there, you know, I'm still like on my, I was 22 or maybe 21, something like that, 22 years old. And I remember losing my job, found my friend on Facebook that moved from Canada to Dubai. And he's like, I texted him, Facebook messaged him and just like, come over. I took a 2-bedroom unit. My brother's not coming anymore. You can come stay with me. And I was like, perfect. He's a good friend, like very good friend from Canada. And, you know, he's living by himself. Why not? The next day he goes to work, which is as an English teacher in an English institute. And I remember meeting the owner of the institute while my friend was teaching. And then a teacher comes in and he's like, my dad is sick and I have to travel. I have to leave right now. And the guy was like, the manager was like, okay, you know what? You can go. And then the second he left, he's like, I hope his dad gets well, but how am I going to substitute him? As I was like, oh, my friend did not tell you what I'm here for. he's like no, he did not. It's like, I'm here to apply for an English teacher job.
Oh, perfect.
So did you study it? I was like, of course, I finished from Canada. I did not say what did I finish though.
He didn't specify what subject.
And he never asked what subject was it. He's like, so you're Canadian? I was like, yes, I am. And he's like, so you know how to teach English? I was like what level are we talking about? He's like level 1 and 2. I was like, yeah.
Of course.
Like, that's what I'm here for today. And I wasn't even there for that reason, but I needed the
job. You were then.
Exactly. So 10 minutes later, I was at the classroom teaching elder people English. And it went for 2 months and then I had to leave because it got to a point where now we need, they were going to award me and I need to be named of what I studied and stuff. So I left.
I absolutely love this. And this is what made me go, oh my, it's such a catch me if you can scenario. You know, I've told you I've studied. You hadn't actually told a lie by that point because you were asked, did you study in Canada? You said yes. Did you finish your studies? Yes. You didn't specify that it wasn't to become a teacher. You were actually doing the job and you were doing the job so well that they wanted to recognize you and, exactly, you know, give you an award. And it was only at that point it was like, shit, might be found out at this point.
Exactly. That's not me. So I had to leave.
Amazing.
And I remember it was getting to 2013. One of my good friends, she's Italian, and she's like, Kusei, there's something called Mr. Dubai contest.
I'm so glad you've brought this up because I was definitely going to bring this up.
Oh, you knew about it, eh?
Oh, I've done my research.
So she applied for it and she applied for me. And I didn't even, I come from a village, originally from a village in Syria. And we're more of like a tribe that's, still, we're like farmers in your area, like, you know what I mean? Like, we come from villages, so we're not that sophisticated where we're going to such, with all respect, contests and stuff. So my dad would look down.
You're going to do what?
Exactly.
Did you tell him?
No.
There seems to be a bit of a don't ask for permission, beg for forgiveness theme.
Exactly. Later on, we'll see what happens later on. Just do it. And things will...
Worry about it afterwards.
Yeah, as long as I'm not hurting anyone.
Yeah. So your friend applied for you and basically registered you.
Yeah, and that day I remember I was out and I was depressed and I was like, I need to do something in life. And then they called me. They're like, can you come tomorrow at that time? I was like, yeah, for sure, I'll come. I was like, let me just go. So they accepted me over in the list of contestants. And I remember it went for 2 or 3 weeks and I won.
I was crowned Mr. Dubai 2013.
Yeah, handsomeness, whatever you want to call it, anything, it would, but whatever it was.
But manly.
Manly. Manly. So I remember that day and the final day of like giving the, like awarding me the title. I remember them putting some eyeliner for the camera and stuff like that. You know, like how they put some makeup on. Which was my first time on camera, like on a professional camera. So at night, I kind of washed my face for sure, but I forgot that eyeliner. So the next day, I take that piece of, like the award and that piece of newspaper to my dad to tell him, to show him. And
look
maybe
what
I did. So I remember knocking his door, like I went to his company and I knocked the door and I went in and I have the award and I have the piece of newspaper. He's like, And he was on the phone as he's shouting and whatever. I was like, so he looked at me. I didn't pay attention that I still had the eyeliner on. Black, you know, like you can tell, you know, like
smudged under your eyes.
So he's like, what is this? I was like, I got awarded Mr. Dubai. He's like, really? I was like, yeah. He's like, so cute. And you have eyeliner as well? He's like, get out. I remember him slamming the door after me. And that was another 2-3 months without talking to my dad.
Yeah, you've had a bit of some ups and downs.
He was ashamed. With your dad. He was ashamed from what I did.
Because before you actually moved to Dubai, when dad had businesses there, could have basically stepped into a job, any business, your father actually said to you, don't ask for help from anybody.
So I had to do it myself. But you know what? I knew that I'm doing that for a reason. Yeah. Because one day I'm going to be sitting in a podcast and I'm going to be saying that story. So why not add another story to my kids one day to tell?
You've got some stories to tell your children, because as well as starting the businesses and becoming Mr. Dubai, you actually
opened doors. It opened, like I had my TV show because of that title. I had many things that came up because of that title. Met many people because of that title. It helped me when I traveled because, you know, that Dubai is a big thing. So when they searched it, it gave me credibility wherever I traveled, because they're like, oh, Mr. Dubai, then they build that trust. So it helped a lot. And then from there, I remember wanted to start my first company. So I went into partnership with my ex-partner. And it was more of a PRO company where we helped people to open businesses. And we went from one branch to 4 branches. I added my, Canadian touch of tech, websites and marketing and stuff. And we grew up to
You scaled really quickly.
Really quickly, yeah. And we grew from there. So he went and he started opening government entities that does the same, like as a franchise from the government. And I took over other businesses, that one of them was a medical center.
Yep.
That also
opened more doors for you, didn't it? Because you're then in the process here of building up really successful businesses that generated significant amounts of income, which you were then reinvesting and opening up more and more businesses.
It was my milking cow. The medical center was my milking cow. It was the place where I used to get my milk to go invest somewhere else.
And you invested quite heavily in very diverse businesses, from connecting people with, you know, hiring people in the PR world to promote your businesses, you know,
to restaurants, fashion lines for women at the malls,
and for men.
And for men for a period of time with Turkey, steel fabrication, marketing, online platform for heavy equipment. What else?
Dubai's first floating restaurant
in the world. It was called Salt Bay, not Salt. Salt Bay as it was literally an aqua pod. They named it an aqua pod in the middle of the sea, and the delivery was through a jet skis.
Some
people tell me, like, why would you do such a thing? I want to build up my name. Where I did the first thing of something so that it's online. So if you go to Forbes and these platforms, yes, it costed me something. It wasn't a successful business because it was something new. So it needed lots of marketing.
But you were in a position to be able to try this.
I wanted to try everything.
And because if we kind of link back to that, you already had successful businesses run, because you've mentioned, obviously, you know, you don't scale too fast. You don't try and do everything all at once. So just
now,
for clarity. Yeah, now.
Now,
but
I learned
clarity
mistakes.
For those people who are listening and thinking, well, hold on, you've told us not to scale too big and diversify too much. You've got to master something and then open the next business. And this is
where my dad interfered many times when I was back then. But the ego back then killed me. One of the things that I learned not to have anymore is my ego. You have to just get rid of your ego, because I thought at that age that I am the king of my age. And I remember my dad telling me, you can't hold too many watermelons in two hands, or, you know, you can't. They're going to fall down and you're going to fall.
So your dad was actually quite worried because investing in businesses
so heavily. The
lessons
he used to tell me, and I never listened back then. Listen to your parents. Like, listen to your dads, listen to your mothers, even though if they're old school, they have lessons that you will then, once you fail, you'll go back and be like, oh God, I wish I listened to them.
So this links back to, there's a phrase, Warren Buffett, who's one of the most prolific investors ever known, says it's great to learn from your mistakes, but it's better to learn from other people's. And I think quite often we can, you know, push away the ideas of parents or elders or people who've walked the path before us and think they know nothing, you know, in today's world. But actually, you learned that the hard way, because you and your business partner built some very successful businesses. You got to a point where your businesses were worth, you know, multi-millions.
Yes.
But we started the podcast by saying, you know, by the age of 28, you built businesses worth around about 10 million.
My share of the
company. Yeah, your share of the companies were just shy of $10 million, but that you lost everything before you built it all back up. So tell us a little bit about how you go from having so many successful businesses, such a diverse range of businesses, you know, your share of which are worth almost $10 million, to it all coming crashing down around you. How did that happen?
Too much trust. Look, I'll never blame anyone for my failure. Because if you're going to stay blaming people for your failures, you'll never see that the problem is in you. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you read that person before you met him or you opened business with him? Why didn't you think of that? And I got to a point where I'm going to be clear about it, and I'm just going to say everything, because mm-hmm. it's me.
Absolutely.
You like me this way? This is the result of what happened with me. Yep. So I got to a point where I'll think of you bad until you prove the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You're most likely going to cheat me. You're most likely going to lie to me until you prove the opposite. I'll never start with, oh, you're a great person. You're never going to cheat me until you prove the opposite.
But that's based on personal experience, isn't it? Because you and your business partner set up such a successful business, and due to continually investing in other areas and, you know.
Yeah, but you have to keep your eye open, Tony. Yeah. You have to. You can't just be like nice to everyone.
I love the ownership that you're taking of this, though, because many people would go, actually, yes. Because you then went from being, you know, super successful, significantly wealth, businesses worth almost $10 million, to in a position where overnight your whole circumstances changed.
Yeah, I remember.
It
was a span of 10 months of losing my like businesses slowly, slowly.
Gradually.
Gradually, and many different factors, but definitely it was too much trust.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you have to make sure you have the right accountant. Sorry. You have to follow up your work, and you have to follow up your numbers, especially if you have a partner. Not because you don't trust that partner. For the sake... Look, as a mother, don't you look into your children's phones and stuff at night? Once
absolutely. I'm very honest with them and I tell them that, but I want to see your phone and I want to see what you're doing, because I don't trust anyone.
Thank you very much. And that's a mother and her children.
And quite often it's other people I don't trust, and not just them. I have trust in them to
but
a certain
the
level to
the
make
family.
The right decision. But we've all made mistakes. I hold both hands up and say, I've made a lot of mistakes.
No problem.
And I also know what I was like at that age. And then you think, you know.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to prove over here is that a mother would still look after her children.
Absolutely.
So how?
It's from a place of wanting to help them.
For the sake
exactly
of them and
that.
The family. So how do you not want me as a business owner not to look after you as an employee and mm-hmm. or as a partner? It's because of the sake of the business.
Well, a lot of people put blind trust in people. And I think there's a difference between trusting people, because I think you have to have trust in any relationship.
All right, so if you want to put blind trust,
you can't put blind trust in people.
But make sure that you're going to expect one day that person to let go of you or just take the money that you trusted. If you're okay with that, blind trust.
I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with blind trust, and I believe we can trust people too. But circumstances change over time as well, because the business partner that you set up with, you know, this wasn't a case of day one and then day two it all fell apart. This was after a significant duration of time where the business has failed.
Tony, for me, it's like a closet. And there are, like, I have hangers in this closet. Every person at the end of the day, most of the people will get to a point where I'm going to put the price tag and hang them in my closet. Maybe it's going to cost me $500, maybe $500,000, maybe $2 million. So most of the people, not everyone, they have a price in your life. They'll sell you for a price one day.
Well, in this instance, you went from having super success to being effectively minus $9.6 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're at a this is not a I left Canada.
I left Dubai with $3,200 in my pocket.
So you left Dubai, and this is what I mean about the overnight, because this was a case of one day, basically, you've got to leave by.
Because I got to a point where I'm smoking four packs of cigarette, drinking big amounts of alcohol just to stay awake, mm-hmm. because I can't stop. It's like going from having multiple businesses that are doing good and going and putting in new ideas to make more money, mm-hmm. to a firefighter, where I go to every business every day, or three businesses, to stop the fire that's coming out from that business, yeah. or that business. So it was deadly.
There's only let's be
realistic. At the age of 27 or 28, what experience do you have? So don't brag about yourself. If you're 27, 28, and you're, no, you don't have the experience yet. You have to respect your age. A day is 24 hours. Yes, you can fit a lot into it, but everybody that's older than you, or the older you get, the more experience you're going to get. Yeah. So first thing, let go of your ego, and then you'll become a better businessman or a better person, to be honest.
Well, you did do, but it can't have been an easy time, because at this point, you then are effectively forced to leave Dubai.
Yes, overnight. Because I spoke to my dad's lawyer. I spoke to my dad, and my dad did not know about all the problems I was going through. I'm more of a person that does not...
share that.
Yeah, I don't like to share my problems. I'll try to fix them myself. But it got to a point where I was like literally dying.
Yeah.
So I spoke to my dad. He took me to his lawyer, and the lawyer was like, you should leave until we see what's going on. So I remember leaving the house, and my dad told me, he's like, listen, so we're three brothers, right? And I'm the eldest. So he's like, I was leaving to Canada. Mm-hmm. And deep inside, I knew I was leaving for good.
Yeah.
My wife was a week away from giving birth to my first daughter, like to our first daughter, Sophia. And she was a newly married wife. Like we just got married like not 10 months ago.
So her emotions are all over the place anyway, because she's a week, 10 days from giving birth.
And then where the heck are you going? All the way to Canada. And we had to tell her that we don't want to shock her. So we had to tell her, my dad had to tell her that, oh, we have a problem with some kind of land, and Kusai has a power of attorney that he needs to be there. But it wasn't that. We just didn't want
to shield her from it.
Yeah. So I remember him telling me, listen, I have three men. They'll either stick and stay three, or they'll become two. I wish you all the best. And it was 8 months or 7 months until I spoke to my dad again.
That must have been so difficult for your dad to basically say, right now I've got three sons, but depending on what happens here, I could potentially only have two. How did that make you feel?
He knows what he raised.
Yeah. Do you think that fueled you to make sure that you were
I'm a Leo.
A success?
Of course.
So how then does...
It wasn't easy.
Yeah.
Because I left with $3,200 in my pocket to Canada. I spoke to my friend on the way to the airport. I was like, listen, I'm coming tomorrow at that time. He's like, what's going on? He's like, just pick me up. Spent that 10 days on the couch. My wife gave birth. And then that day, I remember, I was like, I'm not going to cry about my past and be like, I was that person. Because I meet lots of people today in Canada working in real estate. Now I'm working in real estate. So I meet lots of people in my, like in my working days, and they're like, I was a manager. Past. Who are you today? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I don't want to be like I was one day. You know what? I learned a lot. Let me start again. But then I lost all the trust on myself. I lost my family. I lost my money. I lost my companies. I lost everything.
How did you then become the person that we see today? The person who closed 100 deals in what, 10 months?
Yeah.
In the world of real estate? Yes. Recognized for it, award winning, featured in Forbes. How does the then 27, 28 year old who's separated from his wife, completely different country, $3,200 in your pocket, but minus 9.6 million in businesses? How did you then become the success we see today?
Okay, so I remember when my wife gave birth to my daughter, I remember I applied for a job, and I got a job in a recruiting agency for $45,000, which I used to make four times the amount of that job a month in Dubai, just literally 20 days ago from that period, a month ago. So I took the job, no trust anymore in myself. So I felt like I'm not an entrepreneur anymore.
Yeah, it's okay. Can't do that anymore.
Yeah, sometimes we get weak. It's okay if you're weak. Don't think it's the end of the world. It's just a day or a month or a year. But it's going to play for your own favor one time, like very soon, if you work hard for it. So I remember taking the job 3 weeks later. I wasn't giving results because I was literally
a broken man.
Literally. And the resume they saw was someone else.
Mm.
So I remember even a job after 3 weeks, the lawyer coming and firing me and not allowing me to even go take my stuff from the desk. Wow. They got it for me. Till today, I don't know why they fired me, but most likely because I wasn't
performing.
So I didn't even ask. They gave me the check of $2,000 something or something like that. I remember booking a ticket to Syria, to my home country, and I called my wife and was like, come with my parents and the baby. I want to see the baby. I needed a reason to live again.
Mm.
So I spent a whole month with her on Christmas in 2018, and I came back, and this is where I'm a new man.
Yeah.
New grounds from zero. Let's start. I stopped my Instagram account. I'm big on Instagram. Like
really prolific.
All my life, yeah, is on Instagram and my businesses. So I stopped my Instagram, deactivated it. I disappeared. My Snapchat account had at least 500,000 views every day back then. I was the guy that was wearing a three-piece suit every day in his plastic surgery clinic and the restaurants. So people liked that kind of character.
The image that you had, yeah.
Yeah. I remember that Snapchat account, which is worth a lot. I remember writing a new password on a piece of paper and burning that piece of paper so that I'll never go back to that Snapchat account. New world. I'm not going to look back. Got a cell phone, new cell phone number. And then I started, I went and I got a car, financed a car. I had a good credit score, thankfully, from back then when I was there in 2012. A Mazda 3. I went register for Uber and Lyft. I don't know if you have Lyft in the UK. And took a room in a basement for $350 with a family in the basement.
Literally starting from scratch.
I would do 12 hours of Uber. The application would stop at 12 hours. And another maybe 5 to 10 hours of Lyft.
So you were working both jobs consecutively just to make money.
7 days a week. Just to make money because I don't know when is my wife and my daughter coming because I want to make money so that I can apply for the taxes, so that I can apply for their visas, for them to come to Canada. My daughter is Canadian, but my wife isn't, so they're not going to get her there. So I remember working day and night. And one thing, why did I do Uber and Lyft? It's me. Like, I'm my own boss,
yeah.
My own car. And I was researching. In Canada, it's not easy to speak.
You were interviewing your guests, like the clients in the cars. Yes. I think this is absolutely genius and showcases the entrepreneurial mind that you had. Because many people would think, that's it. I'm down on my luck. I've got to work, 12, 15, 17 hours a day.
I didn't go down to make $20 an hour, no.
You were doing it for the people and connections
you make. I wanted to know who's eating.
In the best restaurants.
In the best restaurants.
In the best hotels that you're driving them to.
Exactly.
So what was the first business that you set up thereafter?
Okay, so how much, I'll tell you something. How much do you make off an hour, like an averagely of Uber over here?
I have no idea.
Like, I don't know. Like in Canada, for example, it's $22,
yeah,
$20.
£20, yeah.
Yeah. My average hour would be 35, which many people right now would be like, this is insane. This guy is not saying the truth. No, because you look at an Uber driver job as an Uber driver job. I used to get stuff from Turkey. Belts, bags, stuff like that. Take a picture of my iPad. I get a small iPad and try to sell that product to the client that's next to me for the next 15 minutes. So I was doing other stuff.
Serial entrepreneur.
Exactly. So my average hour was $30 to $40, sometimes even $50 because I sold 6 belts or whatever.
You've always had a need to succeed.
Yes.
Which led you into the world of real estate. And as we alluded to earlier on, 100 deals closed in a 10-month period, and now obviously back not just to where you were, but way above, and the meager age of 34. I am super conscious of your time. I'm also conscious of our recording time, but what I'd love to know before I ask the next question, probably like -5, but I want to ask one more question before I move on to the final questions, which is, can we do a to be continued part 2? Because I don't feel like we've even scratched the surface of this interview. So can I be your first and your second podcast interview?
All right. Yeah, you can.
Okay. Always going to ask that first. Look, it's like you selling
but
stuff.
But I'm going to say something before we close down, like we end this.
Yeah.
And the second part, hopefully sometime soon, you'll know how I literally got my real estate license and how I closed 100 deals in less than 10 months and how I became 35 under 35 within less than 2 years, and how I became top 1% Canada white. And the final thing is that what I missed in my first run, I made sure I did not miss in my second run to become a millionaire by making sure buying assets. So I have a portfolio of around 13 properties within less than literally 3 years of only making money. Nothing raised, my own money, my own.
All invested yourself.
All invested for yourself. For
myself. I feel like it's such a cliffhanger to leave the podcast on. And I'm going to ask the question I ask of all of my guests because we've agreed to a round two, which is, what is the one question no one ever asks, or what is the one subject matter people never talk about that you would love more people to talk about? It's supposed to do that, by the way. The question is supposed to make think. So what is the one question that people, no one ever asks this question, or no one ever talks about this subject matter? And we'll pick it up in part two.
It's a hard question.
I like it. That's a good thing. So to be continued, we have barely scratched the surface of your life.
No, we didn't even go to it.
And that's because we're only at the age of 34. I'm so excited to see what's next. I feel like this is part one and we'll follow up with part two. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on Talks with Tony, and more so for allowing me to conduct your very first podcast
interview.
Thank you
for having me today in your podcast, and it was a pleasure.
Here's to round two.
You are interesting, but your 13-year-old son is way more interesting. You love
He'll love that. You love that. Thank you so much. Thank you.